Bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Yeah, I've seen some of the funeral pictures on television news at the last couple of hours. Movie of the week, really, in terms of mass murderers attending it. George W. Bush and Bill Clinton, of course. The Clintons, all masked up as well, masked up. Welcome to Thursday's Richie Allen Radio Show. How you doing, eh?
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
Yeah, I was doing all right till you came on, Bully. Well, I'm on and I'm here for, well, about an hour, maybe an hour and 10 minutes today. There you are. Welcome.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
And I'm going to be rounding up some of the news stories of the day, but in our own style. We'll look at them in our own way, you and me, all right? And as usual, you can text me via Twitter, or tweet me via Twitter for want of a better way of putting it, between now and the end of the programme. It's at Richie Allen Show there. It's a very warm one this afternoon, and as I said yesterday, it is prophesied to be extremely warm tomorrow, Friday, right across the UK. Apparently, the entire summer will be condensed into tomorrow, where it's expected to be about 30 degrees in places around the country. 26, 27 up here in the northwest. So a bit of heat tomorrow. And then back to, well, the rain on Saturday. So a more relaxed show today. It's been guest heavy all week. That's not a problem. We've had some very, very good guests this week. Heard from Peter Ebden earlier today. Peter, of course, is a former world champion snooker player and a really nice guy. I've gotten to know Peter a little bit in recent weeks. He was on the programme a few weeks ago, and I hope he'll come back on again real soon to talk about healing. Peter's off to Hungary. In fact, he flew to Hungary today. His wife, Peter and his wife, celebrate their 10th anniversary. So congratulations to both of them. And Peter was asked at the airport about not wearing a mask. Medical reasons, said Peter. He sent me a text. And the guy said, what specifically? And Peter said, that's between me and my doctor. Get in there, son. That's the way to do it. Medical reasons. What exactly? And if this question is put to you on your travels, you say very politely, that's not your concern. My medical history is a private thing. And just walk on. Good man. And then Peter said to me, if he was ever asked for his doctor's name, just for the crack, he'd say Vernon Coleman. Me, I'd say Dr. Vinnie Bumbatz, of course. As a lifelong fan of the comedy of Rodney Dangerfield. Now, it's nearly 6 minutes past the hour. I love more than anything these days when the snowflakes, the career offence takers and finders, because there are some rotten people. I mean, they're putrid, aren't they? They live their days going online looking for an opportunity to take offence for an alleged, or on behalf of an alleged vulnerable group. This must be a mad way to live. I mean, you probably live pretty much the same way I do. Live and let live and just carry on about your business and do your job and then go home and spend it with your family. But with the advent of social media, and of course, the people doing this are not aware that they are being played. You know, they're puppets. They're kind of being used to roll out an agenda that we've talked about often enough. But they are putrid. They're awful people. So that's what they do. They basically go around online looking to score points by finding an example of where an alleged vulnerable group has been offended. And then they try to go viral. Because that's what the arseholes are really hoping to do. They want to go viral. They want to be the story as much as the vulnerable group, you know. But when they don't get their own way, I love it. I love when somebody says, no, feck off, we won't do what you tell us to do because, frankly, we don't know who you are and we don't care very much about you. I love it. You remember this yesterday, I talked about the Exeter Chiefs which is a rugby union team in the UK, in Exeter. The offended wanted the name to be changed, the Exeter Chiefs, and they wanted the logo to be changed and the mascot and everything, because it's terribly offensive, you see. Change the name. If you don't, I might melt down. I might disappear. So they wanted, like I said, the logo, and they wanted the poor bloke who plays the mascot basically to lose his job, because he was running around at half-time posing for pictures with the children in an Indian costume with a chief headdress. And the offended, well, they weren't happy about that. It's dreadful cultural appropriation. Now, the Chiefs have been called the Chiefs since forever, since Moses was in short trousers. Around about the time that Abraham was circumcised, that's when the Chiefs were the Exeter Chiefs. But the logo with the Indian headdress, the chief, that's only been around since 1999. It's cultural appropriation, and, well, we're not having it. But, I was so happy, I nearly, this is a family show, so I won't complete that sentence. I was ecstatic that yesterday the Exeter chief said that we will not change the name, we will not change the logo, but sadly, they said they would fire the mascot. And that's a bit of a shame. 2 out of 3 ain't bad, right? 2 out of 3 ain't bad. So, they're still not happy to snowflakes. They won't let it go. And Ben Bradshaw is a Labour MP for Exeter. Do you remember the days when Labour MPs would be fighting hard for people's jobs, would be standing on picket lines? Remember, now MPs from Labour and Momentum and all of that, they're concerning themselves with this bullshit. And Ben Bradshaw said, I don't think the board of the Exeter Chiefs understands what's going on. The forward-looking and the young are furious because they didn't get their own way. And those who are in denial that there's a problem don't want any change. A problem? With a logo? Of a headdress? He said the statement from the club implying that this kind of cultural appropriation should be seen as a compliment is extraordinary. If the Washington football team can change their name from the Redskins, you would have thought that Exeter could take this a little bit more seriously. It's not the image Exeter as a city wants to project to the world, he said. It's a headdress. And the drama. It's not the image Exeter wants to project to the world. Who the fuck goes to Exeter unless your team is playing away there? Hi, Jerry. Morning, Jerry. Imagine it in Florida. Why don't we fly to Exeter this year, Jerry? No, they're racist there. Who goes to Exeter? Nobody, right? And I was musing yesterday, are there any African... No, say it again, Rich. Don't fall for the trap. Are there any Native Americans in the UK? I mean, is there a Native American community? Because it's all about communities these days with the vulnerable groups. Is there a Native American community in the UK? Well, the BBC scoured the length and breadth of the country using its vast resources, and overnight it found an Indian. It found an Indian. An Indian. Hallelujah. It found an Indian. And her name is Leandra Nethin. I don't care if the appropriate term is Native American. Indian will do for us. Her name is Leandra Nethin, and she was on BBC Radio 5 Live this morning. She's not... Yeah. And again. Yeah, all right. Turn that off. Yeah, so Leandra Nethin, Native American woman, BBC Radio 5 Live, speaking to Rachel Burden, the presenter. 5 Live Breakfast.
Good morning. It's 7:50 exactly. Right, yesterday, you might remember we were talking about this debate that's going on amongst Exeter Chief rugby fans concerning their name and their logo. Well, they decided, having had a meeting last night, this is the management of Exeter Chiefs, to keep the name and logo.
Yes, we'll keep the name and the logo.
Despite nearly 4,000 people signing a petition to get them to drop the Native American branding.
4,000 Egypts.
The club's board met yesterday. They have, though, decided to retire their Big Chief mascot.
That's shocking. The Big Chief is out of a job, eh? Who need, that's unfair, that. Somebody's out of a job. 4,000 idiots. So they retired the Big Chief.
Two is usually at the games. Leandra Neffin is a rugby fan, now lives in Derbyshire and is of the Omaha tribe of Nebraska. Good morning.
The Omaha tribe of Nebraska. And she's a rugby fan, Native American. I love it. Good morning. Right. What next?
And what do you make then of the use of this particular logo and imagery?
It's offensive. It's harmful. There's research that's been done around the harmful effects of the imagery.
It's a headdress. It's a headdress. That's all it is. With the face of a chief. And he looks fairly wise. Like he knows things. That's all it is, love. How could it be harmful?
Branding. So for me, I've been watching it. I've been campaigning against it. I've been doing a lot of interviews.
She's been doing a lot of interviews.
You know, really just speaking out against the racist stereotype of this caricature.
So harmful how? Can you explain a bit more for our audience?
Exactly.
Yeah, of course. So when we think of we as Native Americans, we have this, you know, three-dimensional lived experience. When we look at a cartoon character of us, of the mascot, of the branding, it sort of narrows us down into this one-dimensional box, which then inhibits and informs the wider audience and public how to engage with us. I mean, for the majority...
It informs the audience and the wider public how to engage with us. So presumably, if she didn't step in and we were to be exposed to more images of headdresses... We would be inclined, if we bumped into a Native American person in Derbyshire, I don't know, to be like, oh, and all that sort of thing. Because we wouldn't know, you see. We would assume that they're not three-dimensional human beings. I mean, why don't the presenters tear them to ribbons, eh? Are they that scared of losing their jobs? Just rip her apart.
Majority of people, many will not have even come across a Native American person, yet alone had a...
Exactly! You're the only one in England.
...conversation. And so what's informing their perception of us as people are these stereotypes.
Oh,
so
God.
We have over 562 Native tribes with rich histories and diversity that are being very narrowed down into a caricature or a cartoon figure of us. The mascot, the branding, it doesn't represent us as contemporary Native people. And research has also shown how this is impacting the mental health of our youth, of our community.
The mental health of our youth is affected. Exeter Chiefs have been called Exeter Chiefs for 90 years. In 1999, they took a pretty decent... logo, put it together of the head and shoulders of a chief with the headdress, with the plumage, and that affects the mental health of young Native Americans.
You know, there are issues with identity and how we're perceived as people, and when this kind of figure is what's informing the wider audience,
how we are perceived as people. Again, you don't meet Native Americans. You see the headdress and therefore you imagine, instinctively you imagine that they're a bunch of savages. That they stayed like that. Like all of those Gary Cooper and John Wayne movies. That's how we would have perceived Native Americans. They stayed like that, running around whooping and throwing tomahawks at people and scalping people if it wasn't for helpful Native Americans like Leandra. Yeah.
It's because we experience this relative invisibility within the media.
Jesus
That's
Christ.
Harmful to us.
Yeah. Omaha tribe in Nebraska. First question should have been, what are you doing here? But it wasn't. Yeah, anyway. Is there more? There's a bit more.
What do you say to people who say it's a kind of celebration of a culture and a history and it encourages people to talk and learn about it?
Yeah.
Well, if you want to learn about the history, I think about the colonial history of Britain and the relationships they've had with indigenous peoples and the genocidal policies that have been enacted against us in the United States. So that's not an honor to us.
Against us. When they say that, against us, I say the same to young black people in the UK today. These crimes against us. By us, who do you mean? Didn't happen to you. Didn't happen to your parents. What are you talking about, genocidal policies, love? again, the presenters are terrified of stirring it up a little bit and saying, hang on, you're wrong, you know, but anyway.
If you want to show appreciation and honour to us, support Indigenous businesses, support Indigenous artists, provide platforms and spaces for Indigenous filmmakers, writers. You know, that's a way to honour us.
Positive discrimination, basically. Provide platforms and spaces for us. Positive discrimination. Unbelievable. Leandra there. Apparently her Native American name is a little resting bitch face. Right, let's move on. It's 18 and a half minutes past the hour. Thursday's programme, July 30th. Tomorrow, the final day, the last day of July. Let's have some Everly Brothers then to kick us off this afternoon. Lots more news to come on your Richie Allen radio show. Don't go anywhere. Great to be with you. Ah, the Everly Brothers. When will I be loved on the Richie Allen radio show? Thursday's programme. I've reverted to MSM mode today. Had a mad busy day and I gave up on trying to organise a 2-hour talk show with guests because there's lots of other things going on, website stuff and all sorts of stuff. But I'm enjoying myself this afternoon. A couple more tunes to come, lots more talk as well. I will be reading your comments, so do tweet them in. Music, yes, music. Love a bit of music. I tell a story every now and then that always makes me laugh. I was caught short one night on the radio in Spain. Caught short for a radio presenter means that you need to go to the bathroom, not for your number one. You know what I mean? And would you believe it? I was interviewing David Icke, as it happened. It's an absolutely true story. And as I was the only person in the radio studio, everybody else had gone home. 8 o'clock, I'm the last man standing. I will lock up. Nobody will return to the studio. I thought about playing a record like Hotel California by the Eagles or Don McLean's American Pie. But then I couldn't. I was looking at the clock and I knew that I had David Icke coming to me live from the Isle of Wight. Now, I only barely knew David at the time. Not well enough to tell him that he might have to hang on a bit and the interview might be a bit shorter because I had to go and, well, do my number twos. Honest to God, this is live radio. So what I did was, it was my second, I think, time interviewing him. And I knew that David liked to give detailed answers to questions. This is no criticism whatsoever of David Icke. You know I'm very fond of the man. I don't have anything to do with him these days, but I still remain very fond of him and what it is he does. I knew that he tended to give detailed answers. So I introduced him. Welcome to the programme, Talk Radio Europe and all of that, David Icke. I asked him a question. I turned the speakers in the studio up to 10 and I legged it to the loo, did my business. Took me about 5 or 6 minutes in total to get myself all cleaned up, wash my hands. And when I came back, I could hear, by the way, David was still going strong. Fantastic. Going strong, talking about, I can't remember what subject exactly, but it was brilliant. And when I sat back in my chair, I put my fader up and I went, yeah. Yeah. And about a year or so later, I met him in London for the first time. And a bit of humility goes a long way. I told him the story and he fell off his chair laughing. I said, you do tend to go on sometimes. Kind of handy that for a presenter who's cut short. He found it very amusing indeed. I think for a while after that, he didn't trust me when I was interviewing him. Are you still there, Rich? Are you still there? Phil Restino is in Florida. True story that. Phil Restino is a friend of mine, a peace activist in Florida. And he sent me a clip today that is funny for two reasons. Two reasons. Not three. It's funny for two. Firstly, it shows how the media is always in lockstep. The media gets press releases from government and even government agencies and repeats them verbatim. We know what the media is. It's garbage. This clip is also funny because none of these robotic presenters seem to know how they are sounding and what they are seemingly saying. This is good. Thank you, Phil Restino.
This morning, as COVID cases mount across the country, the mass debate is intensifying.
People are very passionate on both sides of the great mass debate.
The partisan mass debate is heating up.
Mass debate's growing.
The president is trying to have us cover the mass debate.
CVS, Target, and Walgreens are getting in on the mass debate.
The mass debate now taking center stage at local restaurants.
It's 9 minutes after six now, and there's new video of a raging mass debate.
The mass debate in Georgia is getting ugly.
The great mass debate in West Virginia might soon be coming to an end.
This mass debate is far from over.
How many mass debates have you gotten into? Love to hear it.
The mass debate was taken to a whole nother level.
Bishop David Zubik tells Pittsburgh's Action News 4 he found himself in the middle of a mass debate.
And we'll dive deeper into this pet store mass debate.
So we're going to begin with this thing we're calling the great mass debate.
Yes. Do you mask debate? Do you? Not me. I heard you can go blind that way. The mask debate. Wonderful example of the lockstep of the media. I said to you before, and I proved it before. If you got two tellies at home, or even three, I don't have three now. We have one large telly that's about 7 or 8 years old. I got it in London years ago. I was given it as a present when TPV came to an end. And I've got a little flat screen thing. If you put BBC News 24 and Sky News side by side, they cover the same stories in the same order most of the time. Not every day, but most of the time. And the intros, and I proved this, I did this on a Sunday View about 3 years ago. The intros are almost identical. They just rip and read. The mask debate is what they're talking about. That was the talking point they were given to encourage people to wear masks. The mask debate, said quickly, it sounds like something else. But no humility, no sense of perspective. These Muppets didn't even realise how they sounded. Of course, you remember this.
In consumer news, economic factors may take some spring out of the Easter Bunny step this year.
Economic factors may take some spring out of the Easter Bunny step this year.
Economic factors may take some spring out of the Easter Bunny step this year.
Economic factors may take some spring out of the Easter Bunny step this year.
Economic factors may take some spring out of the Easter Bunny step this year.
Economic factors may take some spring out of the Easter Bunny step this year.
Economic factors may take some spring out of the Easter Bunny step this year.
Yeah, and I don't need to go on. You'll remember that. I think Conan O'Brien brought that to our attention. The economic factors, Easter Bunny, spring step, all of that. The same thing. And that's how the news media works. Thanks, Phil. The mask debate. 27 minutes past the hour. Let's have a 60-second interlude. When we come back, for a minute, we'll get a little bit more serious. This is the Richie Allen Show for Thursday, July 30th. Welcome to the programme today. Spiro Skouras is listening in. If you haven't subscribed to his channel, join the 100,000 plus subscribers. You big successful bastard, you Spiro. Great guy, great presenter, great interviewer. Spiro Skouras on YouTube and activistpost.com.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Yes, welcome. One or two of you doubting my story about getting caught short is absolutely true. I will never tell you anything that isn't true. It's a true story. David, this holographic universe theory, where did you come by it and what exactly does it mean? Run to the jacks, pulling your trousers down as you are running. That's a true story. Now, it's 29 minutes past the hour. Tell you what we'll do. We'll have The Clash And when we come back from the Clash, I'll read some of your comments and we'll get a bit more serious. We'll talk a little bit about COVID. Yeah. It's a Sump tune, Train in Vain, on your Richie Allen Show. That tune is buried down the back of London Calling, which is one of the greatest albums of all time. And that's no revelation, really, is it? If you know your music, London Calling is marvellous. We take it out a lot, to be honest. It comes out a lot and gets played a lot, because if you've got anybody over and you stick London Calling on, everybody loves it. Terrific album, 27 and a half minutes to 6 o'clock, Thursday's programme, The Richie Allen Radio Show. Hi to Charlotte, hi to Joe Public, hi to Liz Jones, hi to Gail. Very amused by the mask debate, yes. How far up your own arse do you have to be not to realise what you're saying and how you're saying it? You know. Hi to Faisal, how you doing, Faisal? Scottish John says we need Mrs. Merton to moderate the mask debate, or the mask debate. Very good. What do you make of Donald J. Trump then, saying we might need to suspend or just hold off on the old election there because of fraud with mailed ballots and stuff? Didn't I ask Spiro, and didn't I ask one or two of our other American contributors on the programme of late, what do they think about the possibility even of the election being delayed for a little bit because of COVID-19? I don't know. It's great theatre, isn't it? I mean, it doesn't matter, does it? Hi to Midnight Hill. How are you? Hi to the left hand of God. To John Stott. How you doing, John? Mark Wilde as well. Did I mention Charlie? I might have mentioned Charlie. Hi to Elizabeth. John Rorty is listening in New York. How you doing, John? You in Boston or New York, John? Of course you're in New York. You offered me accommodation. You absolute star, you. When I was going to go and see Bob Seger in Madison Square Garden late last year. Who, I love Bob Seger in ways that it's man love now. It's man love. And I can't find the words. I wish I was a poet like Jean-Anne Crowley. I wish I could express myself like that. The love I have for Bob Seger is, well, it's unfathomable. And he's finished now, Bob. And you can't have everything. And the future Mrs. Allen said to me last autumn, go on, she said, we don't have a lot, but whatever we have, spend it on Madison Square Garden, get a plane over there, go and see Bob. But of course I won't do it because I don't see myself as being a selfish person. But John Rorty said, Richie, I'll give you a spare bedroom. I'll never forget that, John. Blokes, that's bloke love, that, you know. John. Hi to Laurie Hatfield. How you doing, Laurie? Who says the Native American woman we heard from, Little Resting Bitch Face, I think her name is. That's her Native American name anyway. I don't care, you see. Nobody can fire me. Leandra Neffin is her name. And Laurie says she's definitely not speaking for me. I'm legitimately part Cherokee and I don't give a flying flip. The whooping is hysterical. The whooping is childish, Laurie. And for that I do apologise. But my friends know I'm the biggest child that ever lived. I've never grown up and I don't plan on growing up. Like I said, I'm in the unique position now that I can't be fired. It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I'm like Big Earn at the end of Kingpin. Finally, I'm above the law. Richie, the BBG is above the law. It's above the broadcasting authorities anyway. Yeah. So this is it. The more you laugh at things, the younger you are. Forever young, says Jean Anne. Cat says, can I use that argument about the Scottish drunken caretaker in The Simpsons? Well said, Cat. Well said. And you know, when Irish people are featured in American cartoons, invariably the Irish person is pictured as somebody who's falling down drunk. Now that's an outrageous stereotype, which has no basis in reality, says the guy who missed Sunday View 11 days ago because he couldn't stand up. You just laugh at these stereotypes, you know. Let's move on to more serious matters, just for a moment, and then we'll play more music. They've changed the guidelines about isolating now. If you've got symptoms of coronavirus, you must know this. Boris Johnson and his health secretary, Matt Hancock, they've been speaking about this to the media today. If you test positive or show symptoms, you now must isolate for at least 10 days rather than 7. This was announced via Hancock and Johnson, but the decision was made by the UK's chief medical officers, Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance. Of course, Billy Poison Jab Gates' men. These guys are whores or whore masters for Billy Poison Jab Gates. Fact. Right, okay, forget the Indian stuff and all that. This is serious. All of them, every one of them, right? Up to their necks in it with Billy Poison Jab. So they've now said 10 days instead of 7. How they're going to police this? Anybody's guess. Until now, if you showed key symptoms, a continuous cough, a temperature, loss of taste or smell, 1 week, but now it's 10 days. And this brings everybody in line with the World Health Organization. Let's hear from the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson. Here he is, Bojo. Have we got him? We have.
Let's be clear, there's only one way of controlling the coronavirus at present. Obviously, we're making great progress with drugs like dexamethasone, remdesivir. We're able to deal with it in ways we weren't able to do in early March. But broadly speaking, the only way to control coronavirus is if everybody collectively obeys the social distancing rules and works together to drive the virus down. So that's why I make this point that I do. We've done a huge amount. Together, we've really reduced the incidence of the virus and we've got the number of deaths down. But it can come up again. And we've seen what's happening in other European countries. So what I'm saying to people is don't lose focus, don't lose discipline, continue to observe those guidelines. And if you have symptoms, get a test.
Get a test. This is the big thing, of course. They want everybody to be tested. Everybody. And I know many of my listeners, and maybe you yourself, you believe ultimately DNA database. I think you're probably right. Mad stuff. Let's move on. Susan Mickey. What a great name that is. It's spelled M-I-C-H-I-E. I would have thought it was pronounced Mitchie, but it's pronounced Mickey. Susan Mickey. I just keep saying it over and over again because I love... Again, I told you, this is the level. You're dealing with 12. My mental age is 12 when I open the mic. Susan Mickey is... what is she again? Oh, Jesus, hang on. Professor of Health and Psychology at the University of London. She was on Good Morning Britain this morning. You will hear the presenter first.
So do you think it is absolutely right that we should be heading into some sort of lockdown in a few weeks' time? You think that's probably going to happen?
Well, I hope not, but it does depend on government strategy. We're in a situation where throughout England now, the R value is just below one. So we are in a risky situation. We're also in a situation where over time and over the mixed messaging we've had and with all the opening up of different restrictions in a rather confusing way, a section of the population have become more complacent. And so just going into enclosed spaces like gyms and restaurants and pubs, we know are high-risk situations. And we don't have a clear strategy from the UK government, as we do from, for example, the Scottish government or Northern Ireland, of a zero COVID, you know, getting this down to zero.
Zero COVID now.
Down to zero, where we can really all begin to go out, enjoy ourselves, children get back to school, workplaces open, the economy get restored. At the moment, we're in a drift situation and we can see what's happening in Europe. We saw what was happening in Europe before this happened, before the lockdown. We did it then. Cost tens of thousands of lives, according to the modellers. And my concern is with dithering again. And if we don't...
Dithering again. They want another lockdown imposed. People like Susan Mickey. Susan Mickey. They want another lockdown imposed. Because there's a second wave, you see, that might reach our shores anytime soon. And we're seeing already the R rate is on the increase around England. So today, for the first time actually today, quite a few of them, the talking heads, were skirting around the edges of saying, yeah, let's have another lockdown.
If we don't change tack urgently, we may lose tens of thousands of lives again. So
if we don't change tack, we may lose tens of thousands of lives again. The presenter could have said, well, hang on, love. Most of the lives lost were people trapped in care homes. Everybody else who got the virus or... 99.9999999% of everybody else who got the virus didn't even know they had it. And a few of them were a bit ill for a bit. So who are these tens of thousands you expect to die? You see?
You know, zero COVID should be the strategy, as
zero COVID.
Independent Sage reports very eloquently describe how to get there. And that would be my advice now.
Yeah, the lies are getting more and more bold, getting very bold. Over to BBC Radio 2 now this afternoon, the Jeremy Vine show, he had Chris Smith on, who is a virologist and the founder of the Naked Scientist podcast, Chris Smith. Here he is. The young are dangerous now. We're seeing increases in the young.
If you look at the graph, there is a gentle uptick in numbers of daily cases. This is to be anticipated because we've been in a lockdown that breaks the chain of transmission and restricts opportunities for the virus to spread. As soon as you begin to afford it more opportunities to spread again by people mixing more, by people going away, travelling, going back to work, using public transport, etc., then you're going to see more cases. The interesting thing that we should highlight here, though, is that in the UK, as well as in other European countries, that the spread is and the increase in cases is not homogeneous across the population. It is limited to younger people. Ireland are seeing a very big surge in the numbers of cases in younger people. Other European countries, the same. And this probably reflects the fact that people are probably being more cautious if they're older and at higher risk, and they're being less cautious if they're younger and perceive themselves to be at lower risk.
Younger people, eh? This is new. This is out of the blue now, this today, that younger people are carrying it and giving it to people, and it's spreading because they're not as cautious as older people are. Again, Jeremy Vine sat there and I couldn't see him as it's radio, but presumably his head was just nodding along. Number of you are speculating about Boris Johnson. What happened to Johnson? Well, it's my belief, and I've believed this ever since I left commercial media and began to do what I wanted to do, which is to investigate these stories and not be concerned about answering to an editor or to a station manager. And I would believe that Boris Johnson is the Prime Minister of the UK, primarily because leverage is held over him by what we have come to know as the deep state. None of these front men like Johnson hold these positions unless they are compromised, as I said, unless there is a leverage there. And you never know what it is. It could be sex. It could be Johnson might be gay. There's nothing wrong with being gay. But even now, you know, even in 2020 in the Conservative Party, very difficult for anybody to rise to the ranks of Prime Minister anyway. No such problem in Ireland, obviously, but it could be something else. It could be sex with people he shouldn't be having sex with. I'm not saying it is now, but that's how they do it. And a number of you have been speculating about Boris Johnson's illness. I wouldn't be surprised, and I have no evidence whatsoever to support this. This is pure, it's horse manure what I'm going to say now. It's pure speculation. But I wouldn't be surprised if somebody didn't poison Johnson, make him very, very ill for a time. It wouldn't surprise me. To sharpen him up, give him a good shock, you know. Again, I have nothing to back that up with, no supporting evidence whatsoever. It's just a theory. Why wouldn't you do it? Maybe somebody left a little bit of Novichok, maybe, on his bathroom door. A little bit of that Novichok that was flying around. Who knows, you know? I don't know. Those of you who've been with me for a long time will remember me talking about Tony Blair and cottaging. Tony Blair, and I believe this to be true, was at one time when he was a younger man, fond of hanging around toilets and having sex in toilets with other men. Blair was arrested for same conduct, but he was connected, and when he was arrested he gave the name Charles Linton, and he was fined. This is the Miranda story. This is true now. It's not, you know, me just making this up. Now, men hanging around toilets having sex with other men, consenting adults, none of my business, and I make no moral judgment on it whatsoever. But it's the sort of thing that fucks a career in politics right up, right? But if you're a rising star... Gene Anna's asking about Miranda. That comes from an allegation that he fancied dressing up as women. Isn't that right? Am I right? Bit of transvestism. Transvestitism. Transvestism. I'm going to have to dig deep. It's been a while since I talked about this. But Anthony Blair. Yes. Fond of hanging around toilets. It's his own business. But that's how they get to be who they get to be. And sometimes, like I said, it's a financial deal that they are induced into joining or investing in. And then they're told that it's a big scam and that they're liable for prosecution. It could be anything. Look at The Godfather 2. It's a classic example. Michael Corleone wants a senator called Senator Geary, I think, to pave the way for Michael to do some business. He needs the senator. He needs the politics. The senator insults Michael and threatens to shut him down. Next thing the senator realises, he's coming out of a kind of a coma in a motel room alongside a dead girl. The gangsters have killed the dead girl and convinced the senator that his fingerprints are everywhere and that he's going to be blamed for it. But they can get him out of it. You have friends, Senator. Don't worry about it. And I believe in my heart of hearts, and I do believe there is supporting evidence. This is how politicians rise to front bench levels. Because they do not write, imagine, think up, propose policies. They are nothing but actors. Think tanks, the round table groups, come up with the policies on behalf of banksters. And the banksters... have their own bosses. And tell the politicians, these are the policies. I don't like that. Locking people down, I don't like that. Listen, Boris, remember that thing? Remember that thing that we know about, just me and you? Yeah, lock the fucking country down, Boris. All right, I'll lock the country down then. This is how it is. It's how it's always been. That was always been. Now, let's move on. Let's move on. Another tune? Yeah, another tune. Here's REM. Another tune. Right, there's actually quite a bit more to get through. I'll be with you beyond 6 o'clock, which is good. At least it is for you, anyway. No, it's good for me, too. Lots more to get through. We'll do it in a second. Gene Anna's reminded me of a clip that we used to play quite a lot, but we've not played it for ages. And it is the former chief whip to Edward Heath, Tim Fortescue, who took part in a BBC documentary which first aired back in 1995. A bad year to be a Manchester United fan. Lost the league to Blackburn by a point. Lost the FA Cup final to Everton 1-0. Paul Rideout, I think. Bad days. 95. So there was a documentary called Westminster Secret Service 25 years ago. Tim Fortescue was Edward Heath's chief whip, and he says, and you will hear him now, when politicians were in trouble, they would come to the whips to get out of a jam. This is very important, and of course this was never followed up on. No police ever wanted to interview Tim Fortescue about what he says here.
Anyone with any sense who was in trouble would come to the whips and tell them the truth and say, "No, this, I'm in a jam, can you help?" It might be debt, it might be scandal involving small boys.
Might be a scandal involving small boys. So a politician, and this sounds so blasé, so ordinary, so run-of-the-mill. They might come to say, "I'm up to me tits in debt," or "I've been buggering small boys." And what would the whips do?
Or any kind of scandal which a member seemed likely to be mixed up in.
Likely. Fairly likely to be mixed up with small boys.
They'd come and ask if we could help.
And we would.
And if we could, we did.
Yeah.
And we would do everything we can because we would store up brownie points. If, I mean, that sounds a pretty pretty nasty reason, but it's one of
them. No, it sounds great. Don't worry about reasons. It.
If we can get a chap out of trouble, then he'll do as we ask forevermore.
He'll do as we ask forevermore. And then you've got to go to work every day and look at a bloke that's been destroying children. Yeah, we won't dwell because we said all this before. And that's ultimately it. And that was just the whips. You know, the guys and the gals who make it to stage centre, I believe, firstly, they're not all to be found mixed up with pedophilia. Not all of them. That would be short-sighted. It would be stupid. But many of them are. Don't ever forget that. It's how they get there, because they're yours forevermore. You take the money, Bojo. You enjoy the prestige. I don't mean Boris Johnson has been mixed up with children at all. I'm not saying that at all. And I doubt very much he has, or anything like that. But again, you know, leverage comes in so many different ways. It could even be leverage against a family member. Do you understand? That's how it goes. They're not going to let these guys loose on decision making, you know. Why would they? Anyway, this is sinister stuff now. All general practice, all doctor consultants or consultations, so your consultations with your doctors should be done remotely by default, unless there is a reason that you need to be seen in person, said Matt Hancock, giving a speech today to the Royal College of GPs. This is incredible. Now, the Royal College of GPs are not stupid. They oppose this. They oppose this, saying that both patients and doctors benefited from proper conduct. So you've got a row brewing between doctors and politicians. Politicians say from now on in, it's best if you have a consultation with your patient online. Doctors are saying this is not good. Okay. We'll hear more about that in a minute from Matt Hancock. Here's a couple of examples. Here's a couple of nuggets from his speech to the Royal College of GPs today. He talks about war here. War. What is it good for? Listen to Matt Hancock.
If you think about it, in terms of mobilising the resources of the state, the pandemic has been as close as you can get to fighting a war without actually fighting a war. We achieved things that people never thought possible, like building Nightingale hospitals in 9 days, or doubling ICU capacity to treat the most sick, or treating half of patients in outpatients and primary care online. At the same time, our brilliant scientists drove forward the first robust clinical trial to find an effective treatment for coronavirus, and they are currently leading the world in the search for a vaccine. And coronavirus has catalysed deep structural shifts in healthcare that were already underway. Telemedicine, data-driven decision-making, and working as a system, not as atomised institutions. And just like a war, it's forced us to improvise...
A war, eh? A war. This whole thing is beginning to have the whiff of Wag the Dog about it, isn't it, really? To improvise what?
Improvise new ways of doing things.
Yeah.
Some of which will become permanent because they are better ways of doing things.
Permanent. It really is. We'll come to the new ways of doing things in a second. Remember Wag the Dog, Barry Levinson, I think. Am I right in saying that? That he directed. And Hoffman and De Niro. To get a sexual scandal buried, they invent a war. I am prepared to accept that there is a strong possibility that there is no such thing as COVID-19, that it's a bad flu season. Now, I'm not saying that's true because I don't know. And I was very sick in January. I was very sick, gravely sick. And you have to wonder if the whole thing is just Wag the Dog, give them this war against this invisible enemy, this virus. And that might be, there might be a lot in that. Speaking of Spiro, and Spiro Skouras, activistpost.com, Spiro Skouras on YouTube. He says, Richie, imagine the cover a pandemic provides on many levels. Not only to lock down and control the global population while ushering in a new social construct, people could easily be disappeared or assassinated. Yes, absolutely. Biowarfare attacks could be rolled out and blamed on the virus. etc., says Spiro. Absolutely right. Very well put, I would say. Yeah. It's manna from heaven. Not for politicians, remember. They're front men and women. But for the people behind this thing. So where's it all going then, this new normal? What will the future look like for patients? This is Matt Hancock, again, speaking, addressing the Royal College of GPs this morning. And thankfully, they don't agree with him. He didn't get a single, during the speech, round of applause. It was embarrassing stuff, this. But this is what they want.
Better tech means better healthcare. We want to double down on the huge advances we've made in technology within the NHS and social care. Because it's not really about technology, it's about people. It's the child with cystic fibrosis who can have his lung capacity measured at home with a spirometer and an app instead of having to go to hospital with all the risks that that entails.
All the risks that going to hospital entails, imagine.
It's the elderly care home resident, socially shielding for months, able to meet her new grandchild on an iPad.
Holy Jesus. Holy Jesus. Do you hear that?
That entails. It's the elderly care home resident, socially shielding for months, able to meet her new grandchild on an iPad.
Meeting a grandchild, new or otherwise, on an iPad. That's what they think of the elderly, the elders of our tribe, the seniors. We're going to get you used to a new normal where you can meet your grandchildren on a fucking iPad. Eh? The new normal.
It's the local GP, already time poor, not having to spend time donning and doffing PPE because she can do her care home check-in online. Now, I know that I've taken a bit of stick for making technology one of the central issues for the NHS. Before coronavirus, there was a view advanced by some people, would you believe it, which held that anyone over the age of 25 simply could not cope with anything other than a face-to-face appointment. That video consultations, a technology, by the way, that's been around for decades, was too modern and too newfangled for the NHS. Remember that? That apps had about as much relevance to present-day healthcare as nanobot surgery and a mission to Mars.
Apps. 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 And there's a reason the Royal College of GPs are totally against this, and we'll come to that in a minute. Apps. We will treat you using applications on smart devices.
When it came to social care, this attitude was even worse. Take away their fax machines, people told me, and care homes will collapse. Well, all I can say is thank God we didn't listen to the naysayers. And that NHS Digital, NHS X, and NHS Teams right across the country.
NHS Digital, NHS X, NHS Teams. You're hearing these...
Worked so hard on digital transformation. Imagine if we hadn't put the investment into broadband infrastructure so that 99% of surgeries could offer remote consultations virtually overnight. Imagine if we hadn't digitised prescriptions so people could get repeat prescriptions online. Or imagine the massive pressure on NHS 111 at the peak of the pandemic if we hadn't developed it also as an online service. At a time when over 750,000 online assessments were carried out in just one day in mid-March.
Yeah. And he didn't get a laugh when he tried to inject a bit of humour in there, and he never got a round of applause until the very end when he got a lukewarm thank you applause for coming. It was dreadful. The only time I've agreed with The Guardian in recent years was their critique of his performance today. And the Royal College of GPs are not supporting this. Why? Because they are not stupid. They know that Hancock is telling them that they will eventually be replaced by artificial intelligence. Data-driven decision-making. Eventually where they want this to go, and again, some very learned men and women over the years, there's a few of them, have been telling us that this is the way it's going to be. In the very near future, and it's only around the corner, the smartphone or the tablet, or even the laptop, app-loaded, managed by a program, a self-learning program, artificial intelligence, we'll do the work of the doctor and we'll use the camera on the phone or the tablet and we'll use everything it knows. These things can learn at the speed of light, these artificial intelligence programs, and will begin to speak to you and tell you what you need to do, what medication you need to take, and there won't need be any need for any doctors at all. There won't be any human doctors. That's not a fantasy, that's a fact. It's where it's meant to go. And the GPs in attendance today are sitting there looking at one another and looking at him as he's telling them, in the future, the default consultation, not until we pass this fake pandemic now, but forevermore, the default consultation will be online. How do you think senior citizens are going to deal about that? Has anybody stopped to think that a face-to-face appointment gives the doctor, through conversation, a chance to maybe diagnose something else, to see something else that the patient isn't telling them about? Human contact. Crazy stuff, this. Very little about this on the news today. Imagine. Jean Anna saying to me, in the future, your services will be unnecessary. Exactly. He's basically telling doctors in attendance, in the near future, we won't need you anymore. So you can sit there with your dirty looks, because, I mean, they were giving him daggers in the audience. Sit there and do whatever you want. It's all over. Technology is coming. You won't have a job. That's how it's going to be. 5 minutes past the hour. Wiley, the grime rapper, gave an exclusive interview to Sky News. We'll have a listen to a couple of minutes of that in a minute. He's been castigated all over the shop because of alleged anti-Semitic tweets posted by him on Twitter last Friday. And he's been getting a kicking from all angles. He gave an interview to Noel Phillips, who's a young reporter working with Sky. We'll hear just a little bit of it in a moment. Before that, though, we'll have music from Lenny Kravitz. Yes, on Thursday's Richie Allen radio show. Yeah, a bit more relaxed feel to it today, more drive time feel to the radio program. Love having your company, though. Thanks for tuning in. Lenny Kravitz and Fly Away. Gail tweets me, very interesting, very, very prescient. What about the grandma in a care home that can actually hold the new baby? The feeling you get when holding a baby is amazing. You can't get that on an iPad, says Gail. And there must be some transference of energy from the grandmother to the baby. There must be. There has to be a link. Grandmother gave birth to mother who gives birth to baby. There must be some amazing transference of energy to a baby from the grandmother. There must be. Right? I'm not going to get all spiritual now because it ain't me, but there must be. But to hear a Secretary of State moot or put forward the idea that in future you'll be meeting your grandchildren on iPads, it's incredible. Patricia tweets, hugging your parents or grandparents through a plastic curtain is also very comforting. She's right to be sarcastic. We talked about this when this system was basically introduced in Cork, at a care home in Cork, in Munster, in Ireland, of course. We talked about this, we lampooned it, but it was also very depressing. You know, a big curtain would hang down, a big sheet of plastic. And the sheet of plastic contains armholes where you can push your arms through. They will remain sheathed in plastic and you hug your children, but you're not really hugging them because you're covered in plastic. I don't know what to say about this, but it's here. And it's here for the moment. I don't know if it's here to stay, but there you are, 11 minutes past the hour. Let's talk about Wiley momentarily. Wiley is a grime star. He's known as the godfather of grime. I know nothing about the genre. I believe many of these blokes are very talented. They play some clips of the music and the rhyming and the lyrics. Very clever. Often very political and very topical. Not my thing, but I understand why it is other people's thing. Wiley got into trouble because he had a bit of a rant on Twitter last Friday. Some of it had to do with a manager of his. He said some unpleasant things generally. He generalised about Jews and he got absolutely hammered for it. Right. Okay. Then he went on Facebook and he was a little bit unrepentant and I think he was kicked off Facebook for a while. Twitter seemed to have permanently banned him. And he was interviewed by Sky News Noel. Let me just double check now. I think it's Noel Phillips. Noel Phillips. Let's have a look. Noel, it is Noel Phillips. Noel's a young black journalist. He's quite good, actually. He's young and he's new. Relatively new to Sky News. And he got the job of going to meet Wiley. Now, Wiley should have been experienced enough to know, don't do a pre-recorded interview with these people because they get to package the interview and edit it to slant it any way they bloody well feel like it. Here's the actual piece that went out on Sky News. It's not live. They interviewed Wiley. They packaged it up for a 4.5 minute segment. And here's some of it. Ah, Wiley, you should know better. Never let them record you. Unless you're filming it yourself.
On a level, still roll deep on a level. I represent the best MCs on a level.
He's the godfather of grime. For 2 decades, Wiley has been an influential figure in British culture. Pressure on the levels. I save notes and I'm living off shekels. Throughout his life, he says he's been stabbed more than 20 times and has survived in the music industry where he's regarded as an enigmatic figure. That is until he posted a series of anti-Semitic comments on social media. He's been heavily criticised for insulting Jewish people and comparing them to the Ku Klux Klan. It's these remarks which have prompted condemnation from all political parties, including the Home Secretary.
I'm not racist, you know. I'm a businessman.
So if you're not racist, then why did you make the following anti-Semitic comment? I'm going to quote the tweet
you put out.
You said, Jewish community, you're too touchy. Anyway, Israel is not yours. Hold that.
Do I see why that could be as racism?
Should I read it again?
No, you don't need to read it again. If I read what anti-Semitism is and it says the Jewish community is powerful within business, that's racist, I think that's silly. I don't care what nobody says. I want to apologise for...
So he just said that he won't apologise for suggesting that the Jewish community is powerful within business. Right? Before that, the reporter, Noel Phillips, said to Wiley, he said, oh, you said that Israel is not yours. These are deeply offensive things. It goes on a bit. Listen carefully now.
Generalising, number one, and I want to apologise for comments that were looked at as anti-Semitic.
It's the first time Wiley is speaking following a dispute with his former music manager, John Wolfe, who is Jewish. In my interview with the rapper, he repeated similar comments to those posted on his Twitter, much of which is too inflammatory to broadcast.
Right, I've got a huge problem with this now. This is journalism in 2020. It's not good, this. They've interviewed Wiley. They probably had him there for 25, 30 minutes. They've edited it down, and the reporter in the field says this.
That were looked at as anti-Semitic.
It's the first time Wiley is speaking following a dispute with his former music manager, John Wolfe, who is Jewish. In my interview with the rapper, he repeated similar comments to those posted on his Twitter, much of which is too inflammatory to broadcast. And despite
that, puts Wiley at a huge disadvantage in the post. In post, as we call it. Doesn't it? The guy has said Wiley repeated a lot of what he said in his Twitter posts. Much of it is too inflammatory for us to broadcast. But how do we know he's telling the truth? Aren't we entitled to know exactly what Wiley said in this interview, which I think was recorded late yesterday afternoon and was packaged up for today's news agenda? Why don't you just play it and let us make our minds up? Because he seemed to be contrite about generalising, but he insisted that he had a case when he said that, you know, the Jewish community is powerful in business. Well, I'm not saying I agree with any of this or that I disagree with it. Nothing to do with me today. But he says we had to omit a lot of it because it was inflammatory. That's unfair, isn't it, to Wiley? regardless of where you stand on this issue.
And despite saying he regrets the generalizations he made about Jewish people, minutes later, he also said this.
The music industry batch of people I'm talking about, they're the ones who get to benefit from it. That's what this is all about. It's systemic racism from their side. What do you think? The system and that man and a community of Jewish lawyers and thingy have made me feel that way.
Right. Wiley seems to have a real beef with this guy John Wolfe, who was his manager. John happens to be Jewish. That seems to be at the heart of his anger and his explosion on Twitter last Friday. This is what context is, where you look at everything from every angle to determine whether he is an unapologetic bigot who blames Jews for everything, or whether there's something else going on. And here he seems to be saying that he's lost out because of decisions made by his Jewish management, and that he himself has felt in his time working with this label and this manager that he's been a bit of a slave while they've mopped up on his talent. Now, that might be horse shit, basically. It might be. How do I know? I don't know anything about it. I certainly don't know anything about John Wolfe. But this is context, you see. This is what we used to get when television news and when journalism was genuine and was sincere, and when it genuinely sought to get to the bottom of what was really going on. When journalism wasn't ambush journalism, because that's what it is now. Set people up, make them the scapegoat and hammer them. Wiley seems to be a fairly decent bloke whom is really annoyed about something that went down with his manager, who happens to be Jewish. And they're trying to paint him as this monster. You had the campaign against anti-Semitism on television today. They want him to go to prison for what he's been saying. Prison now. Right? When really, it sounds to me like you say the thing that hurts the most when you're really angry, as he is with his ex-management. But Sky still want to spin it as if he's this hateful bastard. Now, a lot of black musicians, particularly from the United States through the 1940s, 1950s, 1960s, a lot of black musicians held, how do I say this? I'm not trying to self-censor at all. They had bad feelings in their hearts. They didn't like their management. They felt that the managers of the record companies they worked for had given them very bad deals, where they, as the writer of the music and the writer of the lyrics, lost out to these terribly bad deals given to them by record companies. And in some cases, in many cases, these record companies happen to be run by Jewish people. Right? It's not to say that Jewish people at all are likely to be bastards or hard-nosed bastards in business. That's a stereotype. But if you read your history of music, particularly the advent of rock and roll music, there was a feeling amongst artists that their record companies ripped them off. Big time. And it seems like Wiley feels that. And he's venting his spleen against this guy, John Wolfe. So, despite him making sometimes silly generalizations about Jewish people in general, which you can deal with, sounds like the guy's got a beef. So spinning him as some sort of hateful, anti-Semitic guy who loathes and despises Jews is probably not fair, but this is where we are.
That way. Yes, they have. They've made me feel that way. Not anti-Semitic. They've made me feel angry and upset because they are showing me the systemic racism and privilege that they're allowed to use on us.
His remarks are self-defeating. And even though he did...
Why are his remarks self-defeating? This is the editorialising that's shocking. Why? He's trying to open his heart up and say, look, this is why I feel the way I do. This is how I feel as I do. I'm angry and, you know, I don't hate people. This is how I feel at the moment. But they're portraying him as some sort of monster.
He's being a racist. Wiley is still struggling to understand why his comments have now led to a police investigation.
A police investigation, can you believe it?
There are people who believe that your tweets are vile and offensive. What do you say to those fans who may take your word and then go on to incite hatred or commit violence acts against Jewish people?
Well, if you've never seen me commit a violent act towards Jewish people or Jewish community...
But what do you want to say to those fans who may misinterpret what you've said?
Well, what do you mean what do I want to say to them fans? When they watch this, they'll realise what has gone on, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but what do you want to say? You know,
what do I want to say to someone who is part of that community? What do they want to say?
Wiley said when they see this, they'll realise what's gone on, won't they? But Wiley was naive enough to think that the entire conversation he had with Noel Phillips would be broadcast by Sky News. But Sky News have edited it. They admitted editing it. They said that they've left stuff out because it might be inflammatory. Maybe what they left out maybe gave more of an understanding of why the man feels as he does about the situation right now. But he was naive. He thought that they wouldn't stitch him up. I'm not saying the reporter stitched him up. Noel Phillips would have given the interview with Wiley to his producer. He wouldn't have had to do that. It would have been recorded and it would have been sent to edit and then written into a story for 4 minutes for the news every hour on the air, and the interview probably lasted 25 minutes.
What do they want to say to someone who's part
fans,
of mine?
To your fans,
no, but
who
don't
may
say mine.
Take your comments.
You know, fans. You've got fans are fickle. Don't wind me up. I'm 41 years old. It's not like I got all big bag of fans. Allow it. I'm not Dave.
But you've got followers on.
No,
Twitter,
don't try it. I'm not Dave and that. I'm not current. Like, you know what I'm trying to say? I'm 41. I'm at the end of my career rather than the beginning.
The offence and outrage of the rapper's remarks has left the Jewish community demanding action.
That's nonsense as well. The Jewish community is not one voice. Most Jews couldn't give a shit, I would guess. I'm not going to try and speak for them either, that would be wrong. But I'm guessing many of them just couldn't give an arse. Guy's had a big row with his record company, with his manager. Yeah, leave him to it, you know. You're talking about the campaign against anti-Semitism and one or two other groups which definitely do not speak for Jewish people in the UK.
Demanding action.
The alarm and offence he's caused is unimaginable, and he's clearly not sorry whatsoever. This is a man also with 500,000 Twitter followers. He needs to be charged with incitement to racial hatred. He needs to face...
Incitement to racial hatred. This is Marie van der Zyl. She's allegedly a spokesperson for the Jewish community. She wants them charged for incitement to racial hatred, and presumably she wants him locked up for losing his cool with his manager. It's dangerous times, these.
The full force of the law.
The full force of the law. Let's leave that there. While he showed up, gave an interview to the wrong people, sadly. They edited it heavily and put it out to dress it up as they wanted it to look, and the rest is history. Finally for today, you heard on the news probably several times about a rover called Persevere, which is being sent to Mars to bring back some rocks and to look for microbial life, signs of microbial life and all of that jazz. In around about 11 years or thereabouts, it'll come back with some rocks. One of the UK's most well-known astronomers was on Sky News today and he said something interesting. I think you'll like it. David Whitehouse is an astronomer. You'll hear him speaking with a presenter called Jane Secker, and genetically modified humans comes up, which is kind of interesting. This from Sky News, David Whitehouse.
But it's likely that Perseverance will give us hints and ideas about life. If we want to know for certain, we have to bring the samples back to Earth and examine them with all the array of precise equipment and instruments that we've got here.
And also, if you are able to go to Mars and come back again, as in bring something back, that is the precursor to sending humans there, presumably.
Well, it is. The human goal is obviously in everybody's minds. But that is a very difficult thing because it's not like going to the moon and then going on a bit further. It is a 9-10 month voyage for humans. Now, Mars is not the problem. We understand Mars. We know what the surface is like. We know what the atmosphere, the pressure, the temperatures. We can cope with Mars. We can cope with being in orbit around the Earth, where astronauts can stay for over a year. What the final frontier is how humans will manage in the interplanetary voyage for 8 or 9 months getting to Mars. That will, from our understanding at the moment, that will strain the human body and our technology to the absolute limit. And it would be too dangerous to do now. So we need to know more about ourselves. Perhaps we need to understand better medicine. Perhaps we need to take genetically modify ourselves to cope with that interplanetary voyage. But this is what we have to do if we're to, perhaps by the end of the 2030s or the early 2040s, put people on Mars.
Yeah, brilliant. Genetically modify ourselves to give us the extra oomph we need to survive in space. I just thought that was interesting because ultimately, genetically modifying human beings is on the agenda anyway. Transhumanism, as we know. So yeah, he reckons to go to Mars, to spend 9 or 10 months in space on the journey and then orbiting Mars, and you know, it might be a 4-year round trip maybe, or maybe a 3-year round trip. You might have to be genetically modified. Right, that's about it for today's programme. 90 minutes today, brilliant stuff. He says immodestly. I don't mean brilliant stuff. I mean, it's great that we got, I thought I might only get an hour out of it, but I squeezed as much out of today as I possibly could. Sharna in Burnley has been on to say, Richie, please can you play that clip? And she names that clip. Can you play that clip? Oh, go on then, just because it's you, Sharna. That clip needs to be preceded by a question. How are we going to get rid of our senior citizens and lighten the burden on the health service? How are we going to do that?
Enjoy yourself and kill a granny is the answer.
That's the answer, ultimately, isn't it? The young have a terrible attitude towards the COVID virus. What is it?
Enjoy yourself and kill a granny is the answer.
Kill a granny is the answer. That's Lawrence Buckman. Listen, next time we talk will be Sunday morning at 11 o'clock UK time for Sunday View. Until then, you have a lovely weekend. Tomorrow it's going to be, well, it's going to be a scorcher. Scorchio, as the great, late great Caroline Ahern would have said, that great comedienne. Comedienne. Yes, comedienne and actress. It's important, isn't it, Jean Anne? Comedienne. That's it from me. Thanks for bearing with me today for the old news roundup. I could have opened the phones today, but to be honest with you, my head's been spinning for the last 48 hours. I've not had, I mean, I don't get much sleep anyway, but the last couple of days has been crazy. And I just would have screwed up the phone in. So best that I just sat here and meandered on and plodded on my own. So we'll do Sunday View on Sunday at 11, and there are some really interesting guests lined up next week as well. Some of you have been asking me about my holiday. I'm not sure yet. It'll be late August anyway. Late August, maybe early September. I don't know. When I know, you'll know. Leaving the programme with Dire Straits and the Sultans of Swing. Speak Sunday. Bye for now. Bye.